Good afternoon, everyone. I'll take things slow. I realize there's a kind of a program delay. Things are exciting around here. If I look like I just came off of a flight after spending all day yesterday at an airport, it's because I just came off of a flight after spending all day in the Fort Lauderdale airport. There's one thing about Fort Lauderdale in the summertime is that you can always predict is that the afternoons are going to be just complete chaos when it comes to thunderstorms. And I thought I had it, and so did the airlines, and didn't happen. So was up in Adam early this morning. So I asked for a little bit of grace as we come into this time together, because I literally just drove in, and a kind lady on a golf cart shuttled me over and told me where to go. So, but I'm very grateful to have this time with you this morning. The EPC is just a natural partner with so much of what Knox Seminary is doing. There's individuals, there's churches, there's leaders within the denomination as a whole, the denomination itself. We're just so grateful for the EPC. There's a similar heartbeat between our organizations and the desire to serve the Lord, to train up ministers to be effective in their calling, and to do so with an eye towards what God is doing in the church today. How do we navigate some of the hard things that are happening? I'm just grateful for the opportunity to be able to spend this time with you. Feel free, if you have questions that are like come up in the moment, we can do a couple of these. We don't have a ton of time, but if you do have a question, either hold on to it and wait to the end, or just feel free. I'd rather have it be a little bit more conversational. My name is Scotty Maynor. I serve as the president of Knox Seminary. I'm just finishing my fourth year as president, prior to which I was there for, well, this is my 11th year there, and served as the academic dean, and I'm a church history professor, among other things. And so I'm grateful to be here. I was meant to be joined by my colleague, who is our tech guy and our communications guy. And so we have a sad little booth with a sign that says Knox Seminary, because unfortunately at the last minute he wasn't able to make it. So, we're here together and I'm grateful for this time. I want to talk about what is one of the major challenges that the church is facing today, and thereby what you are facing today. And in a word, it's change. Change is a huge issue. And we all know COVID. We all know how the world turned upside down. It feels like it's getting back to normal. But that's not the only change that's happening. There's changes happening all around us. And so I want to give you just a little glimpse. I was doing some research on this, about how widespread is the pressure that the change puts on pastors in particular. How widely recognized is that? So here are just a few examples for you. The New York Times last August had a huge article entitled, "Why Are Pastors Burning Out?" Fox News has an article on pastors battling skyrocketing burnout. The Lilly Foundation is giving away hundreds of millions of dollars, and I said that right, hundreds of millions of dollars to address the fact that pastors and churches are facing tremendous change, and with that comes a tremendous amount of burnout. Christianity Today has article after article about the pressures that pastors face in the midst of tremendous change. Crossway published a book last year, Fight for Your Pastor, aimed at helping congregations help pastors avoid burnout. Is any of this resonating with you? Are you burned out a little bit? Okay, you guys know this. You want me to keep going or you want me to just kind of tie it off? I see the finger going. This doesn't last very long. Let me give you a few more. NPR does it. The number one best-selling book on Amazon in the category of Christian leadership is none other by a guy named Steve Cuss, and the name of the book is Managing Leadership Anxiety. It's a wonderful book. If you haven't read it, I would suggest it. but managing leadership anxiety. And according to him, he says, as it relates to burnout, I absolutely believe that loneliness and isolation is all systemic for pastors. So here you are in the midst of all this change, facing tremendous burnout, and yet here are the expectations that are put on you. You need to be strong and decisive while also being conciliatory and gentle. You need to be apolitical while still taking strong cultural positions. You need to be adept and knowledgeable to guide others in the biblical views of vaccines, capitalism, guns, gender roles in the church, immigration, gender dysmorphia, and sexual identity. All the while, you're expected to evangelize the lost, shepherd and cultivate believers in their faith, practically assist those in need, teach children and care for the elderly, offer counseling and pastoral care, and advocate for biblical social reform. That in the midst of the fact that around you, as of 2020, for the first time in American history, less than 50% of Americans identify as Christians. And if you ever take a look at the State of the Church survey that's done by Ligonier and Lifeway, I believe, it's staggering the percentage of evangelicals who do not understand the core fundamental aspects of the faith. We're not talking whether or not they're infralapsarians or supralapsarians. We're talking basic Sunday school stuff. 34% of pastors say that their congregations aren't effective in participating in discipleship efforts. So you don't get a lot of support from within your church. You have tremendous social, economic, political, societal pressures around you. It's no wonder that 42% of pastors seriously considered quitting. The world around you has changed. COVID has changed you and your churches. And people on the outside and the inside demand that you have an answer for everything, while at the same time being willing to hang you out to dry for anything that might go against something that they think or feel is right. You all are in a tremendously difficult position. So what's the answer? I don't know if you've seen the Barna research on the resilient pastor. If you're not familiar with it, it's really worth checking out. Barna, of course, you all know, is the big Christian survey organization, and they've done a lot of studies on the resilient pastor. And what do they suggest is a key part of the answer? So we understand the problem. How do we shift towards a solution? And here I pulled a quote from one of their surveys that they did that I think is very helpful. Listen to this. We've seen a systemic shift in the sort of things churches ask for from their pastors, and that has coincided with an uptick in burnout. And this is the key sentence. A new generation must soon step into church leadership, but many of them are overlooked, underdeveloped, or unprepared for the role. Did you catch that? We need support. You need support. And yet when we look at the available options, many are either overlooked, underdeveloped, or underprepared. Now, the good news is that within the world around us, despite all the pressure that you are under, the view of pastors is relatively positive. Another quote from the Barna study, many people with church experiences feel a local pastor would be equipped to help them with emotional support. Think about that. In a world right now, with all the different opportunities where people have, social media, whatever the case may be, ChatGPT, people are going to ChatGPT for emotional support. People are still saying that pastors would be a great person to go to for emotional support. And this suggests that while despite the real threats to pastors' cultural standing, most people would still feel comfortable turning to a pastor in times of crisis. So take heart. The majority, 65% of those in the communities you serve, recognize that you have been strong, honest, and important figures who led with integrity during the years since COVID. So let me marry the two points that I just made. On the one hand, there's a desperate need for new leadership. There's a desperate need for new leadership, and many are underdeveloped, unprepared for the role. The second point here is this. You, as pastors, you, as ministry leaders, have demonstrated yourselves to be steady, to be clear-headed, to be leaders with resolve, to be those who care, those who have been come out of this fire having been tested and purified in many ways, to be able to then be a huge force, huge influence in the training up of the next generation of leaders that are so desperately needed today. So here's the central point of this talk. Okay, so forget everything else if you want. That's fine. Here's the central point of this talk. To sustain you and your church's ministry efforts to your community, there is a need right now for a revitalized leadership pipeline. And together, you, and I would suggest Knox, can make this happen. You've proven yourselves. You have tremendous experience. You also have the opportunity to be part of the next generation of Christian leaders. However, revitalization requires thinking about things in a different way. Doing the same thing is not revitalizing. It's just doing things the same way. So how do we think about bringing those leaders forward, training them, getting them the experience that they need, learning from you about what ministry looks like in your community, about the hardships that you face, about how you've made decisions in difficult moments, and whether those were good or bad? How do you cultivate that knowledge into seminary students so that they have a running start into their own ministry experience? And this is something where Knox had to rethink our own model of things. We had to revitalize our own method of educating men and women to declare and demonstrate the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's our mission, to educate men and women to declare and demonstrate the gospel of Jesus Christ. And for the first two decades of Knox's existence, we were largely a boutique seminary nestled in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, surrounded by people with tremendous resources that felt generous enough to give to Knox. We had, for many years, more faculty than we had students, if you can figure that one out. And not a great business model, but like I said, the resources were flowing. And then right about the time that I came to Knox, let's call it a decade ago, a little bit longer, it went through a massive shift. Especially, two things happened. On the one side, we started an online program. And on the other side, in the wake of the death of the founder of Knox, who is really the person who was able to pull all of that interest and all those resources together, the resources began to dwindle. And so Knox found itself on the ropes at one point. We weren't even sure that we were going to be able to make it. And so we had to sit together and think to ourselves. We had a conversation with the board, and we said, will the kingdom of God suffer if Knox closes? And we were honest and said, no. No, we've got other reformed seminaries that are doing great work. This will continue. But then we asked a second question. Does the church need a reformed seminary to be doing something different than every other reformed seminary is doing? Should we take the online program and think about what is God doing through this, and can we utilize this in a new way? And so that is what led to Knox rethinking our entire philosophy of education. And I'll mention this again later, but we believe that the best place to educate our students is where they're already serving. You want to put a pin in the map? I get asked this question occasionally from students. Well, shouldn't I be coming to campus? Wouldn't I learn more there? And I say, where do you live? And they'll say, well, I live in Boise, Idaho, or wherever. And I say, if I could put a pin in the map of where the best place to educate you is, it'd be right where you are calling me from right now. And that's actually the whole history of theological education, believe it or not, but we'll get there in just a minute. But the three forces that Knox wanted to address in coming through the revitalization that we were experiencing are the same things that I think churches face when thinking through sending their leaders off to seminary. Accessibility, affordability, and the integration of what they're learning with actual ministry practice. And so when you think about the traditional seminary model, I'm just going to use that language if I may. If you think about the traditional residential seminary model, and that's what I did, this is not to bash the residential seminary model at all. If you feel like that's how this is coming across, I do apologize. But again, we were thinking about the revitalization and recognize that there are accessibility problems, affordability problems, and integration problems. The residential model is inherently inaccessible unless you happen to live near a seminary that you would want to go to. And for those that do, great. Then there's the affordability issue. Not only in order to go to seminary, so let's pretend like we get through the accessibility hurdle. We're going to pack up the family. We're going to quit our jobs. We're going to sell the house, pull the kids out of school, and we're going to move to wherever to go get a seminary education. Well, now you have an affordability crisis because seminaries are not cheap. You guys know this. A 90 credit hour Master of Divinity at, let's call it, and this is a low number, $500 a credit hour, is $45,000. The average debt that a seminary graduate walks away with just during their time in seminary is $33,000. And that's on top of whatever it is that they have from college or other debt that they may have incurred. And then they go off and become an assistant pastor somewhere, making 50 grand a year with three kids, a mortgage, and a car payment, and all the pressures that we were just talking about. And people begin to wonder, why are people burning out? Why are pastors burning out? And the students are like, why is this so hard? The third hurdle is the integration hurdle. And that gets lost as soon as someone within your church goes off to study somewhere else. Yes, they may be able to integrate what it is that they're learning with a local church there, do internships, whatever the case may be. That's good. Those are wonderful things. But it's not your context. It's not your church. The integration, as good as it may be, isn't integrating with you. It's not integrating with your culture. And so Knox redefined our approach by flipping this whole thing around. I take inspiration from Ephesians 4, 11 and following. You guys know this passage. Everyone talks about it. It says that, well, our point in this is that as teachers, our call is to join you, the pastors, in equipping the saints for ministry. We want to make seminary more accessible. We want to make seminary more affordable. We want to make seminary more integrative. I think that's a word. And so that's where the little slogan, in, with, and for the church, came about. It captures the essence of what it is that we are doing at Knox Seminary. And this is true whether it's here in Denver and we're in Fort Lauderdale, or if we have students in Fort Lauderdale studying with us in Fort Lauderdale and churches there. Knox's desire is to serve the church by being in the church, with the church, and for the church. In order to solve the leadership pipeline, we want to keep students where they first feel that call to ministry, in their context. What better place to be cultivated into that ministry calling that God has given them? We want to do it with the church leadership. All of our Master of Divinity students are required to list a pastoral mentor from their church who's going to walk with them over the course of their time in seminary, and be, in some sense, catching. We teach, they catch it on the other end, and they work with the student to be able to integrate what it is that they're learning through Knox with the ministry context that God has put them in. Cultivating them, using the knowledge, the skills, the experience that they've had, all of the resilient things that make you you, that you have survived, that you are here right now and going to go back to your churches in the midst of all of these struggles that we are facing in the world today, post-COVID, they have the opportunity to not just learn from us, but to learn from you. It requires Knox to take ourselves a little bit less seriously, to say, you know what? There are parts of what we do that we don't do very well, nearly as well as what a church can do. I don't know what ministry in Detroit looks like. I don't know what ministry in Tacoma area looks like. What is it? Gig Harbor. That's right. A mental block. Again, I'm tired. It's been a long morning already. Forgive me. But Julie does. We've got a group of students up in Detroit. We're leading, being led by a pastor who is invested in forming them into what the ministry looks like in a variety of churches in the Detroit area. And so together, between that mentorship happening on the church side, the student being cultivated into that context, and Knox being able to train, educate from afar, while still being very actively engaged with our students and the relationship with the pastors, it creates this beautiful synergy between the seminary and the church. And ultimately, it goes back to the one question that I had, which is in starting all of this, not really knowing where it was going to lead. But the thing that drove this is, if seminaries are meant to serve the church, that's our job. Our job is to serve you. Then why is it that it seems like you as pastors, you as churches, you as church leaders that may need seminary training are the ones who are having to give up everything in this relationship? If I'm honest, Knox gave up very little in this relationship in which we are meant to serve you. It felt a little bit more like the churches were serving the seminaries, the student debt, the loss of the church leader. So we wanted to be able to flip that around. And so we developed a model in which we addressed the three issues that we talked about, the accessibility issue, the affordability issue, and the integration issue. I've just spent a lot of time talking about the integration part. But in terms of accessible, Knox offers four degree programs, all of which are completely online. We have two Master of Arts programs, a Master of Divinity program, and a Doctor of Ministry program. And all can be completed completely online. Our courses are 8 weeks long, so it's intensive. Most students only take one course at a time. It's the same content that a student would have if they sit in a class with me. They have the same professor as if they were to sit in a class with me. I teach residentially. I teach online. It's the same assignments. It's the same readings. It's the same lectures. It's the same. It's the same. We don't farm off our online program onto, you know, someone else. We do this because we are invested in wanting to make sure that our education is excellent and that we know our students and that their formation is excellent too. Secondly, in terms of affordability, Knox has among the lowest within the Reformed seminary circles tuition rates. And we intentionally try and keep that low every year. And not only that, the big program that we have, and this may be familiar, we're not the only seminary to do it, but the majority of our students, 250 or so students, take part in what's called the Church Partnership Program. I see some heads nodding, so you can tune out for the next 30 seconds while I explain it to others who may not know it. That's fine. The Church Partnership Program is this. Knox will match whatever a church gives on behalf of the student's tuition up to a third. And so what happens is, call it a 3-credit-hour class. Most classes are 3 credit hours. If a church says, we're going to pay for one of those credit hours, Knox says, we'll join you. We will pitch in a third as well. That leaves the student only having to pay a third of their tuition. So you take that $45,000 degree that we were just talking about, and now it's a $15,000 degree. That doesn't make it cheap. But it does make it reasonable. You spread that out over, you know, a handful of years, and you can do that. Our students do that, and they do it with the ability to walk away from their experience with Knox with little to no debt. I literally, on the plane here, got an email with all of our graduating student surveys from this year. And there were, I think, two who walked away from Knox with any debt. One was less than $5,000, one was a bit more. We think that matters because we want to send our students off, actually keep them where they are, and unburden them from the financial pressures that most seminary students face. We don't take federal student loans, so these are the kind of programs that we have to do. And this year, we started what's called an Esther Scholarship. It's intended to encourage female students, who are our best students, to come to seminary. Julie's a great example of this. But our female students are amazing. But the pressures that they face coming into a seminary are not the same thing that guys face. They're tremendously greater, at least in my experience and in talking with them. So what can we do to cultivate more women to be able to go to seminary? So we started an Esther Scholarship. And if anyone wants to help fund that, I would certainly love to talk to you afterwards. But we are able to grant up to $5,000 a year towards women who are pursuing a seminary degree at Knox. That's in addition to the church partnership program, for example. So this isn't anything new. If we could go back, 1,500 years ago, and I gave this talk, everyone in the room would be like, well, yeah, that's just what we do. We educate within our church. There's a great book by a guy named Justo Gonzalez, who had Justo Gonzalez textbooks for their church history class. Everyone did, yeah. He's great. He wrote a book that I find interesting. Most people don't. It's called A History of Theological Education. It's fascinating. I'm a church historian, and I'm an educator, so it's great. But for the majority of the history of the church, this is the model that was employed. It was the apprentice model. We educated our leaders in their context with the help of the church leaders for the sake of the well-being of the church and the community that surrounds it. So I'm not like clever. This is not clever. I'm a historian. I read things and took a really good idea that for whatever reason we stopped doing some years ago. For us, we are committed to working with the church, the EPC in particular, to rethink the leadership pipeline, to revitalize the leadership pipeline, to help sustain the pastors, encouraging them, resourcing them, building up the next generation of leaders who we've already seen are there, but maybe need a little bit more formation, but then also to have that get pushed down and out and through the church more broadly, providing lay training. We have lots of new and exciting things that we're building out this year to accomplish that too. So as we think about the situation that we find ourselves in, I want to say a couple things. The first is, God bless you. Whether you like Knox at the end of this or not, whether this is of interest to you or not, let me just say, you have been through so much, and truly, God bless you. Hang in there. Your church needs you. And so do the next generation of leaders that are going to be rising up through your church as well. The second thing I'd say is Knox can help. We've been doing this for a while, and it's not perfect, but we're pretty good at it. And one of the things that I love about our program, even here, I got here 5 minutes before I was supposed to start giving this talk, and I'm already running into people that I know, church partners, pastors in other churches, and giving them high fives and, hey, let's grab coffee. There's an intentionality to it. There's a relationship that gets built there. We want to meaningfully serve you. So with that, I'm going to do two things. I'm going to stop talking and take questions. But first, I want to introduce, we have a little questionnaire for you. We're doing research to figure out how we can be even more effective in this. And so we don't get a lot of opportunities to have this big of a group of pastors together to say, hey, would you share your perspective? We're not going to hammer you with all the information and emails and whatever, but if you would share some of your thoughts, I would love to hear them. The second thing I'll say before I stop talking is my colleague who is supposed to be here with me, unfortunately, circumstances just, it was a complete nightmare and he was unable to come. And so he had all the stuff for our booth that was supposed to be out in the thing there. And so normally I would say, if you want to find out more, come visit our booth, which there's an empty, sad little table there, and I'll probably hang around there because I don't want to hang out at the other tables. But come talk to me. And if you don't want to hang out by the sad table, my email address is my first initial last name, so smanor@knoxseminary.edu. And if that was too fast, come ask me later. I'll give it to you again. I genuinely would love to hear from you. I'm here till Thursday. Stop me. I'd love to get your thoughts on this. So thank you for your time. Thank you for coming, learning about this. And I'll open it up to questions. Yes, sir.
I have one question. There are ruling elder in our church who would love to take seminary classes to further his journey. At this stage in life, wife, kids, job, yada, 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 you can't dedicate, 3 years to do it. With the classes, online program, can you
That's a great question. And we have students who are kind of taking classes, not taking classes, depending on life circumstances, right? The term leading into Christmas tends to have lower enrollment because all of you are getting ready with Christmas stuff. We totally get it, right? We're very generous in terms of duration. The key thing is if there's forward movement, right? And so if he's like, hey, I need 6 months or even I need a year, we say, that's fine, but let's talk through a pathway to get you going again. Even if it's 2 courses a year, 3 courses a year, whatever the case may be, we want to serve. Our job is to serve him, not him serve us. Wow, this was either great or awful. Yes.
Do you even the ones who are doing it for distance, do they still come down for maybe a week or two to get some of that on-campus experience, maybe an intensive short term?
That's a great question. That's right. So I'll answer that. So the question is, do some of the students still come down to Fort Lauderdale for a week? There's three things I would say to that. We do 1 week intensives, and the one in January tends to be really popular, as you might imagine. So yes, they can come down, and we encourage them to. So that's my second part of that more broadly. The third thing is that we do have some relationships with churches in which annually, we'll send a faculty member up there. They're like, hey, we got a handful of students in our community. Could we just do a course up here periodically? And so just, for example, Gateway Church in Findlay, Ohio, we've been up there a number of times to do that very thing. So we'll come to you as well, as that relationship develops and if it makes sense. Yeah, that's the other side of this. We're very intentional about the relationship. In the back. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. That used to be an exception to the accreditation standards, which they redid back in 2020. And now I think the only degree that they require to have some sort of in-person contact with is the PhD. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Absolutely. So, if a church is interested in kind of the integration part of it, students, absolutely, just reach out to us. You can reach out to me. You can reach out to just the general Knox information line down there at the bottom of our webpage. which is knoxseminary.edu. And absolutely, yeah, and that's what we want. So I gave a similar talk last year at the EPC General Assembly, and we had a handful of people call me like, hey, this is really interesting. I've got this situation, this program, a group of people that I'm cultivating up, and I'd really like to see this. Where do we begin? And it begins with just a conversation with the pastor or the mentor, whoever the case may be, whatever the case may be, to see, well, what are your needs? What are your goals? How can Knox serve you? And how can we begin to work together to see your ministry flourish in your particular context? And so we have teams that do that. Our MDiv director, the question about the MDiv was raised earlier. He's very intentional he knows the students well. And he also knows the mentors well. So we're in regular communication with both the student and the mentor. And that allows for there to be a bit of a rich relationship there. The awkward silence, this kills me. Yes. Correct.
That's just so ominous in our new world. You spoke about changes. It's an ominous 90 credit hours. It's just a lot.
It's a lot.
Is Knox considering some alternatives to that as well?
Great question. Are there alternatives to the Master of Divinity? And we already have one that we point to that has actually functioned very well in this space. In fact, a number of years ago, when Jeff Jeremiah was the stated clerk, there was some sort of overture that was voted on that allowed for, and I'm sure I'm going to bungle this, so don't quote me on this, but that began to look into that question of, like, if they didn't have an MDiv, but they had a master's degree, what would be the required courses that we would want to see within the master's degree so that we could recognize that as sufficient for pursuing ordination. Is that a fair representation, I think? And so Knox went about the business of actually building out all the classes that we didn't already have. There were only a few. We offered most of them already. But building out those extra classes so that if someone went through our Master of Arts in Biblical and Theological Studies, it's a 60-credit-hour degree program. There's about 21, of the 60 hours, there's about 21 credit hours that are electives. We intentionally try and keep electives fairly meaty. And so that allows for someone who goes through that program to actually graduate and have all the courses that were required. And I realize it's been years, so you guys probably have changed your mind since then. But that's the idea, is that it would serve someone who either couldn't or wouldn't do an MDiv for us to be able to get them the appropriate education for then the denomination to make the decision about whether that made sense to ordain that person. Yes, sir.
Do you have any suggestions or programs, perhaps, for entry level people to
That's a great question. Yeah, we do have audit classes. We're building out actually kind of just like a secondary platform different from our learning management system that'll be basically audit classes. So take some of the recordings that we've already done, open it up more broadly so people can just experience what it's like to learn, to read, to maybe do some assignments. This year, we're actually starting some foundations level classes. So if you think about, I use the analogy of a swimming pool, where if you got Sunday school and a sermon that's kind of at the shallow end of the pool, it doesn't mean that that's shallow content. It just means you've got X amount of time to give a sermon and X amount of time to do Sunday school. And that's kind of here. And if the seminary classes are at the deeper end of the pool, we just have, weeks and weeks and weeks, hours at a time to talk about one thing. That's the deep end of the pool. Well, what we found is that people want more than just, that there's at least some that want more. They want to learn more. They're inspired by your sermons. They're inspired by Sundays. What do we do? Well, maybe I'll take a seminary class. Well, it's too deep for them. So we're actually starting a program that's meant to be kind of like waist level water. It's foundations level classes. It's really just, you know, kind of 30,000 foot views on biblical studies, theology, and missions. And we're actually going to turn that into a 3-credit hour certificate this year, so that if you have people in your churches that are Sunday school teachers, maybe you have ruling elders who don't have a theological background, you just need to know the basics of it at a deeper level. It's not a seminary class, but it's something that's going to dig a little bit deeper than what they may be able to get in a Sunday school. And that's not to knock Sunday school or sermons. It's just that that's such a limited amount of time. So we're wanting to cultivate that middle space. That might be of interest. They are coming. They're being. Fortunately, we have a grant to support it. So the funding came in place just this month, and so it's going to be happening in the fall. Hopefully, with a launch springtime. Yeah. Don't feel like you got to stay, right? If you guys want to get going, but while I have you, I'm not sure what time it is. We're late. But again, thank you for your time, and I'll be here if you have any more questions. These have been really helpful already and insightful, and yeah, grateful for your interest.